Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of murder, murder of children, coercive control, sexual assault, suicide, and abortion. Listener discretion is advised.
On February 19th, 2020, Rowan Baxter forced his way into his estranged wife's car, poured gasoline on Hannah Clark and their three children, Aaliyah, Liana, and Trey, and lit them on fire. Just 11 weeks prior, Hannah was brave enough to take her children and leave the abusive relationship and try to move on with her life. Baxter, unable to control Hannah, wanted to make her pay. After taking the lives of his children and wife, Rowan Baxter died by suicide.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. That's a rough start to things. We do have a couple of thank yous. We have one thank you, but twice.
Yes.
We want to give a hey girl thanks to Beth for requesting this one. And then Beth for writing it up.
Yes. Thank you so much, Beth. No thank you, because it's very sad.
Sometimes I feel like Beth is just trying to hurt me.
I know she is.
Okay. Thank you. I needed validation there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a rough one, though. For real. And we know that there are going to be people who nope right out of this one because there are children involved. We completely understand that. On the level of the way that children are involved and have been in past cases that we've covered, this is probably like top tier in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
So just putting that out there. And we can give an additional trigger warning when we're going to talk about the specifics with the kids. If you want to try to listen to as much of it as you can.
Yeah.
And then skip ahead a little bit. We'll do the best we can there, but just we just want to put that out there. So let's go into the background of this case. So Hannah Clark was born on September 8, 1988 to Sue and Lloyd Clark in Brisbane, Australia. She had a younger brother named Nathaniel. They called him Nat for short. She loved and cared for him just like she was his second mom. It's hard for the older ones to not mother the younger ones.
Yeah, in my experience, you could even be as little as not even 2 years younger and you still get mothered like crazy.
I've heard that with twins too, where they're like literally one of them is like 1 minute older and they're like, I'm older. I need to teach you this. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's not the same, but on Clueless, when Cher is giving Ty advice and she's like, Ty, how old are you? And she's like, I'll be 16 in May or 15 in May. And she's like, well, my birthday's in April. So as someone older, let me just give you.
Yeah.
I think they're 16.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hannah was described as being energetic. She was someone who loved having an audience as a child. She played sports throughout her life. She was the school captain in college. And that's like, for us, a class president kind of thing. She was a student elected to represent the student body. As Hannah made her way through college, she found a love for CrossFit. She spent a lot of time at the gym. In 2008, she met Rowan Baxter at the gym and they became friends.
That's so unfortunate.
Please get your windows open.
Mm-hmm.
I know we've had some comments lately because we kind of got off the window open scale for a little while. And then we made some like comments about it and people in the Facebook groups, which if you're not hanging out with us in the Facebook group, like where even are you hanging out? So like come find us. But they were like, what is this window open thing? And that is when the case is so infuriating that we're going to tell you like how many things you're going to throw out the window in anger. And this one is like, you're going to have to set off some sort of a bomb and just start over.
Yes.
I don't know what to tell you. It's terrible. If you're going to start throwing stuff out the window, like go ahead and get them open now. Any mention of Rowan Baxter, throw your own self out the window. Like, I don't know what, oh my gosh.
Anybody that's near you, that's their own fault for being in the wrong place, wrong time. But
yep. If you're listening at the grocery store,
throw everybody out.
That's on them. That's on them. That's
women
not your
and
fault.
Children first. No, I'm kidding. Yes. But yes.
Yeah. It's just, well, anyway. Okay. So Rowan had just moved to Australia from New Zealand with his wife and young son. Hannah was just 20 years old at the time. At this time, Rowan is 31. They met during a boxing class and Hannah was quickly falling for him. So Hannah tells her parents about Rowan. What?
Again, not the same, but it really reminds me of the Bradley Cooper ScarJo from He's Just Not That Into You.
It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. I remember vaguely.
What are you doing with your life? It's actually been a long time since I've seen it as well, but he meets her at the gas, Jason, but then he goes to her yoga class because she teaches yoga, and then he's like completely married to Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, yes. That's right. Oh, wow. Yeah. Ugh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the same thing pretty much because Rowan's married. He's got a young kid, but now he's in love with Hannah. So Hannah tells her parents about Rowan. You know, there's this guy. I really like him. They did not like this. They didn't like that he was married, of course, but they also didn't like the age difference. He's 11 years older than her. She's barely out of her teenage years at this point. She's 20 years old. If you are listening right now and you are 20 years old, I know that you think that you're a grown ass person. And technically by law you are, but like you get to, I'm pulling out my cane and, you know, coming at you like grandma, but like you get to our age and you're like, holy shit, what, like, that's so young. That's so young. Yeah. And what does a 31-year-old have in common with a 20-year-old? He's married with a kid. They're completely different life stages. Like, I don't know. It's just
right.
The coercive control of it all.
Yes.
Is what it feels like to me. And well, not feels like. It's fucking documented in this case.
No, it 100% is.
Yeah.
We are here to remind you of the list we love and have made. It's not fair to deny you of the products we have saved. if you ought to know
about our Amazon store.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
Thanks.
Wow. That is one way to tell you about our Amazon store. And I think it's the only way.
I think so too.
If, you know, if I'm being honest. Because you guys, we've got products that we love and use for podcasting, home decor, fashion, hair, makeup. I have products that I love for like kiddos. Tori has lists for 90s finds. You name it, we got it. And shopping on our Amazon storefront helps to support the show. So if you're not able to financially support the show, like through Patreon or anything like that, if you just use our link, and you can even shop for stuff you'd normally shop for on Amazon, just go to our link first. Even if you don't want the stuff that we've got, it really, really, really helps us out.
To see all the stuff we've got linked and to shop our Amazon, head to killerqueens.link/Amazon. Again, that's killerqueens.link/Amazon.
So her parents initially don't like him, but they really, really, really tried to give him a chance. They wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt because Hannah loved him. They also did not want to push her away, you know, because if you're 20 and your parents are like, I don't want you dating that guy, I don't like that guy, likely you're going to pull away from your parents. And, you know, so they're just like, you know what, we're going to give him a chance. And eventually they did grow to like him and they were happy for her. So he did, and he promised her parents that he would leave his wife because, like, he did, they did get divorced or separated. But he still lived with her. Her parents didn't like that. And so, you know, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's just because of the kid and like all this stuff. So he finally does do all that, like totally breaks from that relationship. And they were happy for Hannah. It seemed like, okay, he's following through, like whatever. So he ends up proposing to Hannah. They married in October of 2012. And Hannah's parents said it was the best day of her life. And Hannah told them she felt like a princess. And the pictures of their wedding are so, she looks over the moon. I mean, just.
She does.
You can just see the joy on her face.
Mm-hmm. Biggest smile.
Yes. At the time of their wedding, Hannah was 14 weeks pregnant with their first child. Aaliyah Baxter was born on April 10th, 2013. 2 years later, on March 19th, 2015, Liana was born. And a year after that, on December 4th, 2016, Trey was born. Aaliyah was described as being a smart, brilliant, and sassy young girl who was going to be somebody when she grew up. Liana was funny, cheeky, sweet, and had so much empathy for other people. And Trey was so young and had a full life ahead of him, and it was said that he was just obsessed with his mom. You know, they had that little...
Yes, little boys with their mothers. It's so sweet. But let me just tell you, if you have not seen pictures of the children and... They're like model babies, like the most beautiful little tiny family. And Trey, get out of here. Oh, it's just so dang little.
So little. So sweet. Oh, my gosh.
Makes me so mad.
Yes, absolutely. The couple both held jobs while raising their children. Rowan was a pharmaceutical sales representative and Hannah worked a retail job and then had a part-time job working at a local gym. So in 2015, the couple opened a gym together with the help of Hannah's parents and another investor. When Hannah and Rowan first got married, their relationship didn't immediately send up any red flags to friends and family. And again, the couple seemed to be happy. According to Hannah's mom, Sue, on the podcast, Hannah's Story, which is our main source for this episode. And, you know, this is the story told by Hannah's family and friends. Things really took a turn when the couple's second daughter, Liana, was born. So Sue and Lloyd were very involved when the oldest, Aaliyah, was born, but that changed after Liana was born. During that pregnancy is when they first noticed that, like, Rowan would slap Hannah's leg harder than necessary when he was telling a joke. Once Sue saw him push her leg into a gate when he was angry, it just started getting weird. Concerned.
Yeah, sure.
According to Hannah's family, Rowan was very controlling at the gym that they owned together as well. If someone didn't do what he wanted them to do, he would ostracize them. Hannah's parents also witnessed Rowan experience severe road rage, and that really opened their eyes to his anger issues. And
he sounds like a really, he sounds like he was a really mature individual for being way, I don't know, I guess it's all relative or, you know, subjective, but like 11 years, that's to me is quite a bit older than your spouse, but he's like, he's the older one and he's acting like a teeny tiny little titty baby.
Absolutely. I mean, and it doesn't help that like, if you see pictures of him, he's like really built and like whatever. I mean, he did not get his muscles the natural way. He was like cultivating mass, but with a steroid injection, and like, that's going to make you, I mean, I learned about roid rage from It's Always Sunny.
Right. Mass alone.
Mass alone. I mean, come on. But in addition to that, he's just a fucking dickhead already. Yeah. So like, then you add steroids on top of that and he's
Yeah.
Everybody hated this man. Everybody hated this man. He was a personal trainer because they owned the gym together. He was so disgusting, especially to women. He seemed to have a real problem with women. He was hateful to his clients. He couldn't keep clients around. Hannah was personable. People liked her. And like, it just, you know, the whole thing.
It's like, why do bad things happen to good people? And like, she was the best thing to happen to him and he was the worst thing to happen to her.
Absolutely. 100%. And Sue said Rowan did not like her and he treated her really bad. And Sue stood up to Rowan and that was a huge issue for him.
Especially
and Lloyd said,
because she's a woman.
Exactly. He had a major, major, like, men are superior to women complex all the way around. And Lloyd said that Rowan would belittle him. And they also said that Rowan was really jealous of Hannah's relationship with her mom, which he doesn't want her to have a relationship with anybody. He wants her to be completely isolated from anybody, especially who would tell her something's not right here.
Right. Definitely.
Hey, you guys, it's us again.
Yay, it's us.
We threw you for a loop on this one. So we know that a lot of you have been asking, like, WTF, where are episodes 1 through 44? And guess what? Now you can have them.
So let's just remember, though, we need you to take a little caution here. We didn't know exactly what we were doing back then. And we started this podcast as just a fun thing to do as sisters. We had no idea that it would grow into this super awesome club with you guys. So what we're saying is the audio wasn't super amazing, but the content is 100% us. Just being us and talking about some true crime with 90s flair.
Okay, so here are the details. You'll be able to access our what we're calling OG episodes in your favorite podcast app through a private and custom RSS feed link. So to grab that, head over to killerqueens.link/OG and snag episodes 1 through 44 today. That's killerqueens.link/OG. As time went on, Hannah's family noticed changes with Hannah. She was becoming withdrawn. She was extremely worried about how she looked. She was worried that she looked fat because Rowan would say she was a pig and called her fat, especially after she had their children.
This fucking guy, man.
If you gain weight when you have children, first of all, you're fucking supposed to. You know, I gain more weight than is necessary to have a child, but your body is still supposed to gain weight and your body is going to be different after that. It is going to be somewhat different. She was so athletic. And she took really, really, really good care of herself. And that still wasn't good enough for him. You know, it doesn't matter what she looked like. It wasn't going to be good enough for him. He called her a fat pig. He called his clients at the gym fat pigs. Like, and it was all to make himself feel better.
Totally. And we're going to get into it. But like him with his clients, he would work them out so hard just to watch them like break. If that makes any sense. Like they would just be so sick because he was pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing things that you're not supposed to do. He should know that. And he was like, yes, I made four people throw up today. You know, like,
yeah, like, come on. He also started controlling what Hannah wore. She stopped wearing bikinis without cover-ups at the beach. She wasn't allowed to wear shorts. He told her that pink was a color for children, so she no longer wore anything pink. And he also didn't like that. It kind of reminded me of, like, you know, those birds like in the rainforest where like they have the bright colors and it's to attract a mate or whatever. And they do their
birds
little,
of paradise
dance. Yeah. Like that's what he treated Hannah like, as far as like, if you wear shorts, men are going to see your legs. They're going to be attracted to you. If you wear pink, which is obviously a color for children, he wouldn't like me.
Same.
People would be attracted to her too. It was a color that would draw attention, and he couldn't have that. He couldn't have anybody's attention on her.
Well, and listen to this. So I have been in a situation, a relationship that was not this bad, luckily, but it was getting to the point of like, he was telling me, I don't like when you wear this because other guys look at you and, you know, if you didn't want that attention, maybe you shouldn't have worn those pants, or you shouldn't have worn that skirt, or you shouldn't have whatever. And I told him, and I fully believe this, and I hope this doesn't come out as everybody should feel this way, I think. But you wanted a 10. You asked for a 10. And now you're mad that you've got a 10? Like, for Hannah, like, you wanted perfection. You got it. What mm-hmm. are you mad about?
Exactly. Like, you want me. I mean, it's, we could get into the impossible standards that women are held to all day, every day. But yeah, he wants somebody who looks great, is attractive enough for him, which is a very high standard, blah, blah, blah. But like, you also want her to control that other men might also be interested in that. That's impossible. Like,
right.
But if she was like, look like a slob all day so nobody looks at me,
that's not going to work. You don't
like, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just outrageous.
He's a disgusting. Okay. Totally. He also began controlling who she talked to and who she could be friends with. Surprise! He made her shut down her Facebook page so they could have a joint one. I don't have a problem if two married people want to have a joint Facebook account. If that's what you both want to do, that's fine with me. You want to have a shared email address? Who gives a fuck?
Right.
But to force that?
Right.
That's where we have the problem. And the reason he did that was so that he could control who was on her friends list, right? Hannah's best friend, Nikki, was someone he tried to force completely out of her life because Nikki would stand up to him. And he did the same with her brother as well. The relationship with Hannah's brother became so strained because of Rowan that Nat almost did not invite them to his wedding. Sue stepped in, and in the end, Nat and Hannah made up. And he said in hindsight, he's so happy that he did end up inviting her to his wedding. And from his point of view, you can completely understand, like, this is just going to cause drama. It's my wedding, you know, whatever, like.
Well, and I think, too, I mean, even if you can see that it's abuse, because it 100% was abuse. But I think that there probably comes a certain point where you're frustrated and you're like, if you're going to choose him, then fine. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that he's not a good brother or he didn't love her or anything like that. I think it's just, you know, you get fed up with it after a certain point where you're like, okay, we used to be close, but this is a choice. And
right. And
you know what I mean? Like, I'm not at all victim blaming, but like,
no. But from an outside perspective, cause you don't understand. And coercive control is such an insidious thing. And yes. It is so gradual because you can't walk up to somebody and be like, all right, let's start dating. I'm going to fucking control what you wear. I'm going to control what you eat. I'm going to control who you talk to. I'm not going to give you access to money. Like, of course, they don't say that up front. It's rainbows and butterflies at the front so that you fall in love with them. And then they start letting those little things slide in. But you say, well, I've got this time where he wasn't like that. And I'm saying mm-hmm. he because that would be my perspective. So, like, and that's who we're talking about here. He's not like that normally. This is a one-off.
Right.
This is a one-off. He apologized. And that's not who I know him to be. And right. It becomes then so gradual over time where you had this amount of time that was good and only little fragments in time that were bad. And then it reverses.
Right. Then the scales are tipped and then it's...
But you're in it. And and you don't even see it. Like, we're going to talk about this. Hannah does not know she's in an abusive relationship. Not until the very end does she know that. And that was my experience too. I did not know it. Like, I knew that I had to hide things. I knew that, you know, on some level, I knew that things weren't right. But I did, and I think too, for like family members and stuff like that, also, you don't see what's going on behind closed doors. You only see what's happening out. And they are very good at presenting a face that says, oh, well, I just had a bad moment versus this is how I behave. And you kind of, like for family members, they're not seeing all of those other things, but you also don't immediately go to, this is an abusive relationship. You think that that's more rare than it is. You don't want to think that, you know, and it's almost like one of those things where it's like, well, that's, am I being dramatic? Am I, you know, like,
right,
all those factors come in.
Like, that happens to other people. That wouldn't happen to me.
Right. Yeah. Right. Wouldn't happen to my family. Wouldn't happen to, yeah. There's just so many.
And so many people, like, spousal rape just became more well known in the
90s. 1993. Yep.
Yeah. And
thank you, Lorena Bobbitt, for yes, that up.
Absolutely. But it's just, you know, there's still people today that don't know that it's possible and it's abusive. It's abuse, you know? So,
right. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, and also Hannah's very young, right? She doesn't yeah. have all these healthy relationships as a barometer
right.
to gauge this by.
And there's a power imbalance already.
There's a power imbalance already. And there are so many things that happen within a relationship. Like my boyfriend, while I was with him, he was actively stalking me. He stalked me all the time. I didn't know that somebody you knew could stalk you. I thought that stalking is like that peeping Tom person who you don't know and they're hiding in the bushes and they're following you around. Like, that's what I thought stalking was. So the fact that this guy, I'd go to work at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'd be there till we closed at, you know, 9, have to finish everything up, end up at 10 or whatever. And he sits right there in the parking lot, pointed straight at the window, watching me for 6 hours work. I thought it was sweet. I was like, he's waiting for me to get off work. Like, I didn't know. And I think a lot of times you don't know. You think, well, stalking doesn't happen in a relationship, right? Like, it can't be wrong if you are together.
And for you as well, you were very new to a serious relationship. So you had no idea that
was like,
wasn't...
what, 17? Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't
know. Hey, you're just a late bloomy. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. I had my first serious relationship in the first grade.
Well,
the breakup was messy.
Sure. And we still think about it, but.
Well, of course we do. Cause you know, people don't forget. And it was really tough. It was really tough, exactly. But
yeah,
I'm working through it.
Okay. Peace be with you.
Oh, and also with you. Thank you.
Thank you. There were several incidents with Rowan where his anger was out of control and Hannah did tell her family about them. There was a time when he found out that she had texted someone he didn't want her to. So he threw her phone across the room and this broke the screen. After that, he began going through her phone, questioning the kids about who mom had talked to throughout the day, where they had gone. He was going through her purse. He was calling gym members to ask about her. Anything that went wrong in Rowan's life was completely taken out on Hannah. And he controlled like who she was able to train at the gym. Like every aspect of her life was controlled by him.
Right.
And he often also told Hannah that she wasn't a good housewife, despite the fact that he didn't help out at home. Who the fuck do you think is doing this, dude? It's not the fucking like house fairy. Like
that's yeah. Trolls don't come out at night and clean up after us. But I mean, that is not always the way, though. It's always someone who refuses to pitch in. That's the first one to be like, well, this looks like utter shit.
Exactly.
What have you been doing all day?
What have you been doing all day? They've got three kids. Like, that's just
and
crazy.
She works too.
And she works. And actually, she's the breadwinner because he sucks at his job so much. Everybody fucking hates him that nobody even wants to see him. She's the one bringing in the money.
I would say in a normal circumstance, I'm like, wow, Terrell, you're kind of coming in hot. But I'm like, can you be a little hotter? Put some stank on it. Like that
know,
fucking
right?
guy.
Put some mayonnaise on it. Make it stank.
Yes. Yes.
The only time that Hannah's family knew that he did any housework and you housework would be when he would go on these like cleaning rampages where he would literally just go around the house and throw away the kids' toys.
How terrible.
Like, these are young kids too, 6, 4, and 3. So if you're going to be pissed that these kids have toys out, you better check your fucking self. They're little kids.
Well, yeah. Like, have you ever met a kid? What did you expect?
What did you expect? What did you expect? I know. And I will say this just for anyone who's, I don't know, in a relationship, newly married, whatever. Have the conversation. What do you expect life is going to be like when we have kids? What do you expect life is going to be like when we get married? Because there is this, like, there are people who have a lot of trouble with, like, kids leaving toys out. You know, I've seen this in, like, friends' relationships and all kinds of stuff. And it's like, okay, but, like, we expected that, though, I thought, right? Rowan didn't. He expected these kids were going to be militant and cleaning up perfectly after themselves, like all that kind of stuff. Like,
or Hannah was going to do all of that for them.
Exactly. So it's those are good conversations to have. I know this is a different situation, but I'm just saying in general, like, what do you think life is going to look like with kids? What do you think our home is going to look like with kids? What do you expect the home to look like? You know, and what do I expect? And then how can we, you know, maybe we set an alarm at 7 o'clock every night and it's our cleanup alarm and everybody picks up 2 or 3 things before they go to bed, or, like, you know, just like find these ways, but they're little kids. Like, it makes me so mad. And if Hannah didn't do what Rowan wanted her to do, he would use the kids as pawns. If Sue was supposed to have them for the day, he would not let her take them because that would hurt both Sue and Hannah. And of course that hurts the kids too. But the word he used for that is Hannah misbehaved. Therefore, you can't have her. Hannah, this is the consequence of your misbehavior. Look what you've done.
Nope, nope, nope. That is, ugh. I hate it.
Yeah. The couple was also facing financial issues. The gym they owned together was opened in 2015 and after 3 years was moved to another location, but they were struggling. Sue and Lloyd helped as much as they could. They even remortgaged their home so that they could pay bills and rent. According to Sue and Lloyd, Rowan would spend the couple's money on frivolous things. So Hannah had to open a secret bank account just to keep their bills paid.
That's outrageous.
And again, she's the one making most of the money because he's so
just spending it.
Unlikable. Yeah. And he's spending it on shit that he wants.
Mm-hmm.
While your family is not being taken care of.
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, to be honest with you.
No. 100%. Yeah.
It tracks for Rowan.
Mm-hmm.
According to Sue, Hannah was thinking about leaving Rowan shortly after Liana was born, but then she became pregnant with Trey and she felt trapped. She said that it was, you know, because it was a boy, Rowan would not want to let him go. And despite Hannah's hesitation, Sue and Lloyd began preparing their home for Hannah and the children. And as we mentioned earlier, Hannah was really big into CrossFit and actually competed with some members from the gym. One of her teammates was Dave Kramer, and he was very close with Hannah, the kids, and at one time, he was also close with Rowan. In 2019, Hannah's team qualified for a CrossFit competition, and Hannah was really excited. But Rowan did not qualify for the solo competition, so he decided that he was just going to jump onto Hannah's team so he could still be in the competition, and no one on the team wanted him to join, but they didn't really have a choice. So He joins, forced his way onto the team. Hannah, at one point, was in the car and apologized to a team member for his behavior, but she didn't know it. Aaliyah had been playing with her phone and accidentally recorded this, her talking about or apologizing for his behavior. When Hannah got home, Rowan blew up at her for disrespecting him on, you know, apologizing on his behalf. And at the time, Hannah assumed that while Aaliyah was playing on her phone, she had somehow recorded the conversation and it got sent to Rowan by accident. But we're going to find out that it's worse than that. So after this blow up, Rowan decided that he was going to pull out of the competition because he believed that without them, the team would have to forfeit. But they were able to find a replacement. On the morning of the competition, Hannah went to the gym. And then when she got home, Rowan and the kids were gone. There was not a note. There was not any sort of message. He was not picking up his phone calls. So she calls her mom and her brother in a panic. And then at lunchtime, Rowan finally called her. He told her that it was all her fault and that he would bring the kids home when he was good and ready and that they were just fine. And he said that he could not believe that she had called both her mom and brother about this. And this is when the dots are connecting. This is when Hannah realizes that Rowan was somehow listening in on her conversations.
Yeah, like, how do you know that, dude? Maybe.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Because I sure as shit didn't. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, I was so frantic and I called this person and this person and this person and this person, you know.
Exactly.
And after this, Hannah talked with her mom and was going to pull out of the competition. But Sue was like, no, that's exactly what Rowan wants you to do. So Hannah did compete in the competition. And when Rowan got home that afternoon with the kids, he acted like everything was fine, that he was super proud of her. He even posted about it on social media. And Sue says this is when Hannah knew that she had to get out. Hannah told her parents that, you know, get your rooms ready at your house. She even called a women's center for advice on how to get ready to leave. Hannah woke up on December 5th, 2019. She went to the gym. When she got there, she broke down and her best friend Nikki helped her get things ready for leaving Rowan. Nikki and Hannah went to Hannah and Rowan's home where she had each one of her kids pick out two toys to take with them and left with two garbage bags for her and the kids. They drove Hannah's car to a McDonald's. They left that in the parking lot with her cell phone because they figured that Rowan was tracking her or listening in on her conversations. So Hannah and the kids spent the night at Nikki's house that first night because Rowan did not actually know where she lived. Sue said that when Hannah picked Aaliyah up from school that day and told her that they were leaving, she told her mom, oh, good. Aaliyah was six at the time, but she knew that the danger, that they were in a dangerous situation and she was afraid for her mom. And Nikki told Melissa Downs of the Hannah's podcast or Hannah's Story podcast, excuse me, that they had a party at her house to celebrate that night. This is going to be the best time of Hannah's life and the kids as well. And Rowan continued calling that night, begging for Hannah to tell him where she was. After that first night at Nikki's, Hannah and the kids ended up staying with Sue and Lloyd for the weekend. Rowan finally got in touch with Hannah and she agreed to meet him that Sunday morning for coffee to talk. The kids stayed with their grandparents. And after their talk, Rowan actually came back to the house with Hannah. Sue asked Hannah if she was okay, and Hannah told her that she wasn't, but that she was going home with Rowan that night, but was going to leave the next morning. And she told Sue that she would be at the gym the next morning so that Rowan wouldn't suspect that she was leaving. On Monday morning, Hannah left and went to her brother's house. Rowan called Hannah and told her that she was hurting the children so much by doing all this. And Hannah almost left to go home, but Nat convinced her to stay. And so that was when apparently Hannah opened up to her family about everything that had been happening. Nat says that every time Rowan messaged her, it was like Stockholm syndrome, and she felt like she needed to go back. And he said that it was like when, or that it was like he was the puppet master and she was his puppet. Sue said that mentally, Hannah was still with Rowan and it took a few weeks to break free. Hannah kept telling her mom that Rowan couldn't keep controlling her life and that she needed to move away. Her family convinced her not to move away, and she and the kids officially moved into Sue and Lloyd's house. After Hannah left, the gym the couple owned closed, and they were $75,000 in debt. Hannah had gotten a new job at Athlete's Foot before she officially left Rowan, and while they were still together, he would show up for every shift she worked. But once they were broken up, he would walk by constantly to see if she was there, and Sue and Lloyd began driving Hannah to work in fear of what Rowan might do. Rowan called several of their mutual friends after Hannah left, convincing them to be on his side, crying about how she left, and ultimately making himself out to be the victim. They called them their flying monkeys, right? At one point, Rowan tried to convince Dave Kramer that he was the reason that Hannah had left him. And Dave told Rowan that he didn't support him, but also told Hannah that he needed to back off because he was also in fear of what Rowan might do. There was an instance where Rowan got into the home and just stared at Hannah, and they had already started padlocking all the gates and locked all the doors. But on that particular day, there was one door that was missed. Nat wasn't initially worried that Rowan would hurt Hannah or the kids after the breakup, but that eventually changed. Rowan snuck into Hannah's parents' house and took Liana. Hannah went to the police because Rowan was refusing to give Liana back. And at this time, Rowan was allowed visitations with the kids. But the police had put a child protection order and a domestic violence order in place after he took Liana. And Hannah initially refused to do this because she was afraid of what the implications might have been. Hannah did tell a female police officer that while she was still with Rowan, he forced her to have sex with him every night. And if she didn't look like she was enjoying it or she refused, he would become enraged. This officer believed every word that Hannah said and told her that that was spousal rape. The police also believed that she was being coercively controlled, despite how hard it is to prove. After the DVO, the domestic violence domestic violence order, and child protection order were put into place, Rowan became very angry about the custody of the children. He told his friends that they were his kids and it should be 50-50 custody, and he didn't care what advice he was given on what he needed to do to gain custody. They were his and he should have them 50% of the time, which unfortunately, I don't think he wanted them. He just wanted to hurt Hannah however
exactly.
he could.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know this because really we don't hear much about his like first wife and son after this point. Does he have any relationship with this child at all?
No idea. Yeah.
Like it kind of seems like that was just forgotten. You know, you don't hear in anything that you read or hear about this really that like
he had an active relationship with his firstborn son. No.
No.
During this time, Rowan was allowed to see the children, but Hannah was not to have any contact with him at all. And on one occasion, Hannah decided to go out and get Trey out of the car and found photos of herself in her underwear in Rowan's vehicle. When she tried to grab them, Rowan twisted her arm back and sprained her wrist. When Hannah asked him about the photos, he said that he planned to submit them as evidence that she was a willing participant in sex. Because she wears underwear and he maybe happened to snap a picture of her in said underwear.
Like, I'm sure she was a willing participant in sex some of the time.
Right. But that's like the whole consensual, do you want tea thing? Like, and also she's married to him. He's going to see her in her underwear. And that is so like, what were you wearing? Like, mm-hmm. well, you wore underwear. So you were asking for it. Like, come off it, dude.
Yeah. Like we live together. We're married. There's going to be times where I have to change my clothes.
Yeah.
But that's not an invitation.
No.
And then he also, she told maybe that police officer or I don't remember who, but that sometimes during sex, especially if he was really angry or whatever, he would choke her mm-hmm. and it scared her and she didn't like it and it hurt. And of course, after he'd always be like, I'm sorry, I got carried away. You know, it was for my gratification. I didn't mean to hurt you, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, was she a willing participant in that?
Right. And there's nothing wrong with it. Consent. Consent all the way around. Two participating, law-abiding, well, mm-hmm. adults, just adults. I want them to be legally adult and you can consent to anything that your little heart desires. But if there's not consent there, then that's the problem because mm-hmm. that yeah. is yucky.
Even if you consent to something like that and you're like, okay, fine, I'll give that a try. And then you're like, I don't like that. That hurt. It was not fun.
You
it
have
scared me.
Rescinded your consent. And now yeah,
that
you
don't have yeah. the consent anymore. I mean, just like, why we got to say that out loud?
I know. I know. Hannah contacted the police as Rowan was in breach of the DVO and for assault. And police gave Rowan 48 hours to turn himself in, but he took 10 days. His charges were downgraded and he was given another 48 hours to turn himself in. And in that 48 hours, Hannah, Aaliyah, Liana, and Trey were murdered.
Okay, so question. Police say you have 48 hours and you say, nah, I'm going to take 10 days. On the third day, which is after the 48 hours, shouldn't we be arrested there?
Yes. What is even the point of these yeah, rules? When
because he's just saying, well, no, I'm not going to do that. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess not. Okay. You just let me know when you want to come.
We tried. Yeah.
And then after that 10 days, then they're like, okay, how about 2 more days?
Right.
He already had 10. Like, what? I don't know. On the morning of February 19th, 2020, Hannah's father, Lloyd, got up and went to work around 5 a.m. As he was leaving, he saw Liana walking to the bathroom. He debated whether or not to stop and give her a hug and kiss goodbye. He ended up heading out the door without doing so because she was half asleep and he thought he would see her later. A couple hours later, Hannah, Sue, and the kids were all up getting ready for work and school. Sue had gone to the gym. Hannah had gone to get coffee. Once back home, they feed the kids breakfast. Sue gives them all a hug goodbye, tells them she loves them. She goes to work. Meanwhile, Rowan made the 10-minute drive from his home, making a stop at a gas station, then going to a cafe around the corner from the Clark home, sitting outside drinking coffee. About an hour after Rowan ordered his coffee, he told the barista that he was in a fight with his wife. Then he drives over and parks across the street from the Clark home. And when Hannah and the kids walked outside to head to school around 8:15 that morning, Rowan grabs the gas can that he had in his car, walks across the street, jumps in the passenger side of Hannah's silver Kia, and he tells her to drive. And she's doing as she's told, obviously on high alert, like, okay, something's going on here. She saw the gas can. She knew that they were in imminent danger. Hannah turned onto Raven Street and she sees a man outside washing his car. And so she drives toward him. There was one window rolled down and the man saw that Rowan had Hannah. He described it as in like a bear hug while she was slowly driving down the street. It is so very apparent that something is wrong here. Like,
and she is yelling to him too.
Yeah, she's yelling out the window. She's saying, I need help. He has covered us in petrol. Somebody called the police. He's trying to kill us. So Hannah pulls the car over and keeps screaming for help. And then another man in the neighborhood runs over. And as he's trying to help Hannah get out of the car. So actually, let's say this. This is where it's about to get really bad. We're going to hear about things like this. This is a horrific incident that is about to occur.
Yes.
So this man is there trying to help Hannah get out of the car and he sees Rowan flick a lighter. And she just said that he'd covered them all in gasoline. And the car just goes up in flames. And the man who tried to break into the car to like help Hannah was flung backwards. He did not know that there were children in the car. Because of the impact of the explosion, which witnesses say was felt from 10 meters away, the door of the car finally burst open and then Hannah was able to get out of the vehicle. Two tradesmen that were in the area at the time of the explosion pulled Rowan out of the car. The man who'd been washing his car ran over and he starts hosing Hannah and Rowan down. And when he looked into Rowan's eyes, he said they were black. He said there was nothing there. And then he goes back to Hannah to keep helping her. And this same neighbor suffered burns from the fire, as well as the gentleman who initially tried to pull Hannah out. I mean, it was an explosion. So like everybody that was right there got burned in some way. The daughter of one of the neighbors called 000 at 8:26 a.m. One man heard Hannah screaming that her children were in the car. And when he opened the back door, he saw them and he said that the human spirit had left his body. And unfortunately, no one could get close enough to the car due to the flames and the fact that the car was slowly rolling backward down the street. Then to everyone's surprise, Rowan dives into the passenger seat of the car and he's like rooting around for something. And then he comes back out. Now, if you're thinking he's trying to stop the vehicle so he can get his children out who are burning, no, that's not what he was worried about. He comes out of the vehicle with a knife because he'd brought a knife with him too. And after getting the knife, he kneels on the ground. He's got burns on 80% of his body, and he leans forward on the knife twice in his abdomen and once in his chest. Like,
I can't imagine being there and watching all of this.
I know. Happen. Can you imagine being like, you're like, I'm just outside this morning washing my car.
Right. Yeah. I cannot. Oh, that's why you shouldn't wash your car. It's dangerous.
Don't wash your car. Don't wash your car. Just don't do it. Mm-mm. As this was going on, sirens could be heard and fire and rescue were on the way. The fire crews arrived first and began putting out the flames. When the paramedics arrived, they went to Hannah first, and she was able to tell the police everything that had happened. Despite having burns to almost 100% of her body, the only part of her body that was not burned was the soles of her feet.
Poor angel. Seriously.
Rowan was also tended to, and it was determined he was going to be sent to the hospital for care despite the amount of burns and stab wounds he had suffered. It was then determined that Hannah would be intubated and anesthetized before being taken to the hospital. Rowan goes into cardiac arrest and open surgery was performed in the ambulance. They were able to fix the laceration to his heart caused by the stab wound to his chest, but they couldn't get his heart pumping again. One could argue he didn't have a heart in the first place. So I don't know what they're even talking about, but you know, that's just me. Rowan Baxter was pronounced dead at the scene at 9:14 a.m. and his cause of death was the self-inflicted stab wound to his chest. I feel nothing.
I'm not sad about it, but at all. And I feel like if they did find his heart, it would, and they were trying to get it started again, it'd be like doop, doop, doop.
Yeah, doop. Exactly.
Like a little hummingbird. Like,
uh-huh. Yeah, like that's all he's got right there. All three children, 6-year-old Aaliyah, 4-year-old Liana, and 3-year-old Trey were all pronounced dead at the scene. Hannah was taken to the hospital where her friends and family were eventually able to see her. Sue had heard sirens all morning while she was at work, and while in the break room, a coworker told her that 3 children had been burned to death in Camp Hill. When the coworker said it was on Raven Street, she knew. Just after she found this out, 2 police officers walked in to tell her the news of the deaths of her grandchildren and the condition that her daughter was in, and then Sue had to tell her husband and son what had happened. Hannah's parents, brother, sister-in-law, and her best friend Nikki were all by her side when the decision was made to unplug her life support. Nikki held her hand until the very end, and her mom said, "You can go to your babies now." And Hannah Clark passed away at 5:40 p.m. that day. She had burns on almost 100% of her body and she survived that long. And you also just have to be in awe of her jumping out of that car and just yelling, "My babies are inside. My babies are inside. Somebody get to my babies." She also said, "I shouldn't have gotten out of the car. I should be in there with them." Just, she had no concern for her own anything. It was just,
worried about the kids.
Hannah, Aaliyah, Liana, and Trey were all laid to rest in a single white coffin with pink flowers on it around 3 weeks after their deaths. Her brother Nat remembered Hannah saying that he loved her since the day he was born. In his farewell, he told her that she was, quote, "one of the greatest moms to walk this earth," and that it was no wonder her kids were just the same. Nat told Aaliyah that she was everything a big sister should be, brave, strong, and quite bossy. He told Liana that she was sweet and caring and that there was so much of her mom in her. And he said to Trey, "Trey, mother's little man in her." Sorry.
I was wondering when it was going to happen. I was
hoping this would fall on you.
I know. I'm so sorry. I can do it if you want, but.
Yeah, maybe do this. It's just 3 in a row. That's tough.
Yeah. He said to Trey, "Trey, mother's little man in her best surprise. I'm so sorry I couldn't protect you."
Oh, it's just awful. And like, Aaliyah was only 6 years old, but she knew. People try to say that like kids don't know what's going on. They know what's going on.
Well, yeah, she was very, very worried for her mother. And that's her father.
That's her father. And she stood up to him quite a bit. She would slam doors in his face. She would tell him to leave and never come back. She would encourage her mom, you know, if like we know that when she said, "Hey, we're gonna leave dad," she's like, "Good, we need to." Like, it's just,
she's a brave little girl.
Brave little girl, because I know that man was scary.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Oh, just terrible.
Autopsies were performed on Hannah, all 3 children, and Rowan. Hannah's autopsy showed that she had died from multi-organ failure due to the effects of the fire. 6-year-old Aaliyah died from the effects of the fire, including burns and smoke inhalation. 100% of her body had severe burns, and though toxicology showed positive for a potential toxic blood level of carbon monoxide, it was unlikely to have caused her death. 4-year-old Liana was killed due to the effects of the fire, including direct thermal effects, effects of smoke inhalation, and other products of combustion. The baby of the family, 3-year-old Trey, died from the same causes as Liana, and Rowan's cause of death was the stab wound to his chest, but the extensive burns he suffered may have contributed as well. It is noted that he was not suffering from any disease of brain injury at this time, or brain injury at this time of his death. And an investigation into the fire was conducted, and it was found that the fire started in the cabin of the vehicle and moved to the engine bay. There was minimal damage to the fuel cover, which shows that the fuel in the fuel tank had not yet started to vent and minimally contributed to the fire. clothing of all three kids, Hannah's clothes, burnt fabric from the rear passenger door, and the remains of the gas can all contained gas residue. However, none was found on Rowan's body or clothes. It was concluded that the fire was ignited after gas was poured on the occupants of the car.
I had wondered too, because Rowan was a professional, semi-professional rugby player before all this. And I know rugby is a tough sport.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, I dated a guy who played rugby in college and he had his nose broken at practice one night. Like, he called me and he was like, yeah, I broke my nose tonight. I'm like, what the fuck happened to you? He's like, rugby practice. I'm like, that was your team? Like, right. That shit's rough stuff. So I did wonder about like his brain, you know? Yeah, getting hit and like that kind of stuff. But he just was that fucking evil.
Yes, absolutely. The deaths were investigated as a homicide, and it was concluded that Baxter had premeditated the murder of Hannah Clark, and it is believed that he intended to drive her to a secluded place, stab her, and burn her body. They believe this plan was obstructed when Hannah pulled into the neighbor's driveway, and the decision to murder the children could have been made at this time. And they believe that once Baxter realized what he had done, he had killed himself. An inquest into all five deaths began on March 21st, 2022 at the Brisbane Magistrates Court and ran until March 31st. There were 35 witness testimonies that included evidence and statements, and witnesses who had assisted Hannah on February 19th, 2020 testified about their experience as well as first responders and police officers. Senior Constable Skeynes was the first officer to speak with Hannah upon arriving at the scene, and he detailed to the court the domestic violence training he received while in the academy. He had the option to take a domestic violence course and did so, but that program no longer exists. He stated that in 2022, every officer up to a certain rank had to complete an online program in relation to coercive control. And he stated that when a defendant breaches a DVO, they don't always get charged. It depends on the circumstances of that breach.
I mean,
I think that's bad.
I think that's, what the fuck is the point of it?
Exactly.
What the fuck is the point of it?
That, you know what the point of
so
it is.
So many times, you know, I had a restraining order, a protective order, and I'd call and say, he's here. He's not supposed to be here. And they'd say, well, it's like a whole thing. We'd have to go there. By the time we go there, would he be gone? We don't know. And why don't you just leave?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to have to leave. Why am I being punished?
Right.
This is my church. This is my school. This is my, you know, like.
Right.
What's the
Absolutely.
Point? It depends on the circumstances. A breach is a breach.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, nobody made him take responsibility or pay for anything in a timely, the rules didn't apply to him and he knew it.
Yes. It's so infuriating and heartbreaking and tragic and just a kick in the face that he had the 48 hours to turn himself in. He took the 10 days. They said, well, now we give you another 48 hours because apparently we just give you 48 hours anytime you fucking ask for it, even if you don't ask for it and you just don't do what you're supposed to do. And during that time, they're all killed.
I know. Yeah, that's outrageous. And yeah, it's like, okay, you have 48 hours to turn yourself in. They're like, well, how about 14?
Days.
And then he goes on to do something like this. It's, ugh.
Yeah, and I'm not upset with Skeynes. Like, he didn't make the laws. You know, the laws are there.
Right. This is a bigger
issue,
sure.
But like, yeah, a breach is a breach. Then what's the point? I mean,
but you know what the point is. It's in case somebody passes away or gets murdered, the person hopefully who had done the murdering will not die in the process, so they can get charged. And those DVOs or protective orders, whatever, are going to help them get prosecuted harshly or harsher. Yeah. That's really the only, I mean, as far as I can tell, that's the only reason.
I mean, that's specifically what I was told, because I asked the question, well, then what is the point of this protective order that a judge issued for me? And they said, well, it's really so that if he ends up doing something to you, there's a paper trail.
Uh-huh.
And he'll get in trouble. They literally told me that. And I'm like, And I understand that we don't live in fucking Minority Report where the police can look ahead and be like, oh, he's going to do something, so I've got to stop it now. But I know that,
I do
like,
wish
her
we
friend,
did.
I know that her friend Nikki went to the police on her behalf and was like, he's going to kill her. He's going to kill her. He's going to kill her. And they're like, but he hasn't done anything yet.
Right.
So I can't do anything based on, but he had. He had already. That's the thing. If he had not done anything, if there was no protective order in place, if he had not breached it and sprained her wrist during this time, we know that we watched I Am a Stalker, you know, and we covered that on Doc Jams. If there's a protective order in place and your brain says, I'm going to do what I have to do anyway because I'm so enraged.
Right.
If you're going to blast through a protective order, knowing that you could get arrested, knowing that the police are going to be caught, like, and you just don't give a fuck, that's escalation and that is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That is dangerous.
Absolutely. Yes.
He had done something. I just.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
What is enough?
I know. There were witnesses that were friends or associates of Rowan Baxter that provided evidence of his personality to the court. And it was stated that he was controlling, driven, didn't like to be told no, and always had to be the alpha male. He always tried to be better than his clients at the gym. And if somebody was better, he accused them of cheating. He trained his clients as hard as he could and enjoyed watching them become exhausted and vomit because of the work. And he would lie when he needed to.
If he was still alive right now, he would be an alpha bro with a podcast, 100%.
Oh my God, yes. Ugh. After Hannah left him, he became obsessed with seeing the children and wouldn't eat or sleep and continually painted himself as a victim. He claimed to friends that he wanted to change to get Hannah back, but they said he had no intention of wanting to change. He just wanted things to go back to the way they were. A mutual friend of Hannah's and Rowan's stated that Hannah was, quote, warm, loving, caring, and resilient. He stated that she was tough and would never play the victim and took responsibility for her actions. And he said that after the separation, she was very reasonable in regard to see the kids seeing Rowan until he began acting out. He said that Rowan was a great father, but was intense and couldn't see someone else's point of view. Now, I saw a video of all three kids playing with Rowan. It was like almost like wrestling. Like they were running up to him and he was like pushing him down and stuff like this. And Trey is teeny. Like he might have been a year old. Maybe two. He didn't look like he was talking much, but Rowan was rough with Trey. And Trey's crying and upset about it at some points. And he's just like knocking him down, throwing his head down on the floor. Like, I mean, he was rough.
Yeah, he doesn't care if they hit their head. There was one situation where it was one of the girls. I don't remember which now off the top of my head, but he was doing something like that, flung her into a door frame. She hit her head. It started bleeding. They had to go to the hospital and get stitches. And he just completely blamed it on her. And, you know, like, oh, well, that's your fault. He did the same thing to Sue when he was training her once. He dropped her on her head on purpose. Her head got cut open and she was bleeding. And he stood there, pointed at her on the floor and laughed at her.
What a piece of absolute trash this
doesn't
guy
even like, help this woman get up and like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean.
Right.
Nope. Just laugh at her.
Fuck. Oh my God. Around Christmas of 2019, Hannah told this friend that she wanted Rowan to have 50-50 custody because he was a good father and wanted them to be involved in their lives. And at the same time, Rowan was telling him that Hannah was crazy and just trying to destroy him. Hannah's family and friends testified that even though they saw that Rowan was controlling, verbally abusive, manipulative, and dominating, they never thought that he would take the lives of his wife and children. Several officers testified and said that there needed to be more services for both the victim and perpetrators of DV in Australia. Susan Beatty, the manager of the Domestic and Family Violence Death Review Unit of the Coroner's Court of Queensland, that is such a long title. Novel.
Yeah.
Or the DFVDRUCCQ.
Of Q. Yes. Yes.
Of Q. Yes. If that's short. Easier for you. Yes.
Yeah.
Provided expert testimony of the quadruple homicide and suicide. And she stated that it is evident that Rowan used coercive control toward Hannah from early on in their relationship. There were witness statements that Susan wrote, say, about that said that Rowan forced Hannah to have an abortion when she became pregnant 6 months into their relationship. And shortly after this, he told her that he had previously driven to his ex's home with a rope in his car and planned to kill her, their child, and himself. before her death, Hannah had repeatedly reported to services that this comment had always upset her. It was always on her mind and made her feel controlled by Rowan. And she was very fearful of what he was capable of. Susan detailed every incident between Hannah and Rowan from the time she left him until the day of the murders. And there were several communications with police and protective services. Susan testified that there were several missed opportunities to address Rowan's behavior. During the inquest, CCTV footage was played of the days leading up to the murders and Rowan's suicide. 2 days before the murders, Rowan is seen at a hardware store at 5:40 p.m. holding zip ties and continually picking up gas cans and putting them back. He was seen at the checkout buying the zip ties, a gas can, and mineral spirits. Then the next day, he was seen at a service station filling the gas can with gas and then buying 3 Kinder Surprise eggs inside.
For what?
Well, I think because the plan was
to try to, abduct them.
Right.
Like, hey, I just killed your mom. Here's a Kinder egg.
I know.
Forget about that.
Right. The court had also read a letter that Rowan had written in the notes on his phone 3 weeks prior to the murders. He had written this to Hannah, but it wasn't found until after the deaths occurred. And he wrote that he was hurt and that Hannah had never told him how she felt. He wrote that he was sorry, but he was finishing the game and that he was going to see the children and no legal team or her were going to tell him otherwise. He wrote, quote, "I have told the kids that you love them and they will miss you, I'm sure. You've destroyed my life and I cannot move on. I hope all this was worth it for you and your family." And he signed it with his and the children's names. There was also testimony from a psychologist that Rowan saw after Hannah had left, and he had 2 meetings with her. And at the inquest, she stated that Rowan was sincere and should have contact with his children because he wanted to change. She claimed that he never spoke about harming himself, Hannah, or the kids, and he was supposed to have a 3rd session with her on the day before the murders, but he had canceled. After several testimonies on coercive control, domestic violence, and the actions perpetrated by Rowan Baxter on February 19th, 2020, the inquest found that it was unlikely that any further actions taken by police, service providers, family, or friends could have stopped Baxter that day.
Erroneous. Could he have taken a gas can, jumped into her car, lit everybody on fire, brought a knife with him, picked up all the zip ties if he was in jail?
Right. No.
I don't think you can do that from jail.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe Australia is different.
Right. It was also found that he was not mentally ill and was a master of manipulation. The coroner also found that the psychologist Rowan saw was an unreliable witness because she wrote her notes of after the murders and was essentially covering her ass.
Perfect. We love to see that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Love to hear it, too.
At the inquest, the coroner made several recommendations to improve policing, child safety, and system responses. He recommended having a trial of a specialist domestic violence police station, increased training for all specialist domestic violence police officers, and increased funding for behavior change programs for men in both the community and in prisons. There has also been reform throughout Australia that includes legislation designed to enhance domestic violence risk assessment and management practices, as well as legislation to introduce information sharing schemes that are essential to a whole of system response to domestic violence. Sue and Lloyd founded Small Steps for Hannah in memory of Hannah, Aaliyah, Liana, and Trey. Small Steps for Hannah was created to raise awareness and educate children and young people on how to identify the behaviors associated with coercive control. Dave Kramer, one of Hannah's friends from the gym, is a part of the team and helps to educate the public. There will be a link in the show notes for this website for more information, resources, and a place to donate if you are so inclined. In 2022, Sue and Lloyd won the Queensland Australians of the Year Award for their work at Small Steps for Hannah. According to the Australian of the Year website, they received this honor because they empower victims to speak up, they guide family members to be aware of potential unsafe environments, and also create safe environments for those who need them most. There is an area inside the Bill Hewitt Reserve in Camp Hill that is dedicated to Hannah, Aaliyah, Liana, and Trey, and it is called Hannah's Place.
It's so sad.
It's so sad.
So sad.
It's just so sad. And hopefully, like, could things have changed? What ended up happening? We'll never know that.
Right.
It did happen. And so hopefully things will now change.
Absolutely. Like, yes.
And I Sue and Lloyd are championing that effort and just all the love for them and everything that they've gone through. And
absolutely.
And, you know, hopefully, like, if anybody listening to this is like, wait a second.
That sounds familiar.
Some of this sounds familiar. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Reach out.
Check out that website. Yeah. And also, I mean, there are plenty of resources online, but hopefully that will encourage people, if you are unfortunately in an abusive relationship, to find the courage or just know that you're not alone and there's someone out there that can help you. But that is the case. We, of course, want to know what you guys think, but we love you and we will catch you next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
You guys know what time it is.
It's fuck up your name time.
Mm-hmm. AKA shout out time, in case you did not know that we were about to fuck your name up.
Yeah.
But we will. I promise you that.
We will.
There is no getting around that. These are some of our kind of newest patrons. We're slightly behind on this. I'm so sorry. We want to give a hey girl thanks to Justina Gannon.
Leah, I'm going to say T's.
Sure. Rebecca Bennett.
Tanner.
Madison Poston.
Andrew Adams.
Blake Wainscott.
Hassini. Oh gosh. Idiri Wira.
Okay. Michelle Graves.
Sarah Wagner.
Jessica Jones.
Haley.
Cassidy White.
Heather Scarpace.
Megan Robinson.
Marissa Heindel.
Ashley.
Cassie Croft.
Michelle Brown.
Elizabeth Mix.
Jade Ian Heller.
Sam.
Teddy Adkins.
Sardis Perez.
Ashley Snow.
Ange Barron.
Beth, I think, but it has an E at the end. Beth.
I think I've
done every possible pronunciation. I do hope one of them is right.
Except for the correct one, I guarantee it.
Yes, 100%.
Kelly Shaw.
Emma Carlson.
Dana Dukes.
Najee.
Tracy Kirvin.
Madeline.
Angie.
Kristen Whiting.
Haley Smith.
Danny Orlikowski.
Brianna Hines.
Hannah Bushnell.
Kelly Anderson.
And Lindsay G. Thank you guys so much. If you would like a shout out and for us to 100% fuck your name up, be sure to go to patreon.com/killerqueenspod and join at the $10 level or higher.
Yay.
And we will gladly fuck that name right up.
Yep.
Love you guys.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.